voice lowered even more with incredulity. "Richard, did you hear what I said? Black Death! People sometimes recover from the plague, but not when it's this advanced." "If we could have gotten to him sooner..." Nadine's imputation trailed off. Colin's grip on Richard's forearm tightened painfully. He heard her stifle a cry. Richard glared at Nadine. She looked away. "And do you know how to cure the plague, herb woman?" Drefin sneered.
"Well, I..."
Nadine blushed and fell silent. The boy's eyes fluttered open. His head rolled toward them.
"Lord Roth,"
he said with a shallow breath. Richard put a hand on his shoulder. "Yes, Kip. I came to see you. I'm here." Kip nodded the slightest bit.
"I waited.
His chest rested longer between each breath.
"What can you do to help?"
came a tearful question from the doorway.
"How soon will he be well again?"
Drefin opened the collar of his white ruffled shirt as he leaned close to Richard. "Say something comforting to the boy. That's all we can do. He won't last long. I'll go talk to the mother. It's part of the job of healer." Drefin stood, pulling Nadine away with him. Colin was leaning against Richard's shoulder. He feared looking at her, lest she break down in tears, lest he break down in tears. "Kip, you'll be up and playing Jala soon. You'll be getting over this any day now. I'd like to come watch another of your Jala games. I promise to come just as soon as you're better." A faint smile passed over the boy's face. His eyelids closed part way. His ribs sank as breath abandoned his lungs. Richard crouched, feeling his heart pounding as he waited for the boy's lungs to fill again. They didn't. Silence settled into the room, patiently waiting for darkness to return. Richard could hear the wheels of a handcart outside squeaking, and the distant, raucous cry of ravens. The music of children's laughter drifted in the air. This child would never laugh again. Colin's head fell against his shoulder. Soft sobs claimed her as she clutched his sleeve. Richard reached over to pull the sheet over the body. The boy's hand rose slowly off his stomach. Richard froze. The hand floated purposefully to Richard's throat. The black fingers curled, gathering Richard's shirt in a death grip. Colin had fallen silent. They both knew that the boy had died. The boy's hand drew Richard closer. The long, silent lungs filled once more with a breath. Richard, the hair at the base of his neck stiffening, put his ear close. "The winds," the dead boy whispered, "hunt you." Chapter 29. Richard stared in a daze as Drefin wrapped the dead boy in the sheet. Only Richard and Colin had seen what had happened, had heard what the dead boy had said. Behind him, in the outer room, the mother wailed in anguish. Drefin leaned close to him. "Richard." Drefin touched his arm. "Richard." Richard started. "What?" "What do you want to do?"
"Do? What do you mean?"
Drefin glanced over his shoulder at the rest of them back by the door. "What do you want to tell people about this? I mean, he died of the plague. Do you want to try to keep it a secret?" Richard couldn't seem to make his mind work. Colin leaned past Richard.
"A secret? Why would we want to do that?"
Drefin took a deep breath. "Well, word of a plague might cause a panic. If we let people know, believe me, word of it will beat us back to the palace."
"Do you think others have it?" she asked.
Drefin shrugged. "I doubt there would be only one isolated case. We have to bury or burn the body at once. His bed covers, bed, and anything else he touched should be burned. The room should be treated with smoke." "Won't people want to know why that's being done?" Richard asked. "Won't they guess the reason?"
"Probably."
"Then how could it be kept a secret?"
"You're the Lord Rahl. Your word is law. You would have to suppress any information, arrest the family, accuse them of a crime, have them held until this is over, have the soldiers carry off all their possessions to be burned, and shut up their home."
Richard closed his eyes and pressed his fingertips to them. He was the seeker of truth, not the suppressor of it.
"We can't do that to a family who just lost a boy. I won't do that. Besides, wouldn't it be better if people knew? Don't people have a right to know of the danger they're in?
Drefin nodded. If it were my decision, I would want people to know. I've seen the plague before, in small places. Some have tried to suppress the knowledge of it to prevent panic, but when more people started dying, it couldn't be kept a secret.
Richard felt as though the sky had fallen on him. He struggled to make his mind work, but the dead boy's words kept echoing around in his head. The winds hunt you.
If we try to lie to people, they won't believe anything we say. We have to tell them the truth. They've a right to know.
I agree with Richard, Colin said. We shouldn't try to deceive people, especially about something that could endanger their lives.
Drefin nodded his concurrence. We're fortunate, at least, with the time of year. Plague is worst in the heat of summer. It could run rampant if this were summer. In the colder weather of the spring, it shouldn't be able to get a good foothold. With luck, the outbreak of plague will be weak and soon over.
Luck,
Richard muttered. Luck is for dreamers. I only have nightmares.
We have to warn people.
Drefin's blue eyes looked to each in turn.
I understand, and I agree with your reasoning. The problem is there's not much to be done other than burying the dead quickly and burning their things. There are remedies, but I fear they are of limited value. I just want to warn you, news of plague will spread like a firestorm.
Richard's flesh prickled with goose flesh. On the red moon will come the firestorm.
Dear spirits, spare us,
Colin whispered. She was thinking the same as he. Richard sprang up.
Yannick!
He crossed the room rather than make the boy come to his dead brother.
Yes, Lord Rowe?
His brow creased as he struggled to hold back his tears. Richard put one knee to the floor and held the boy's shoulders.
Yannick, I'm so sorry, but your brother isn't suffering any longer. He's with the good spirits now. He's at peace, and hoping we will remember the good times with him, and not be too sad. The good spirits will watch over him.
Yannick brushed his blonde hair aside.
But I
don't want you to blame yourself. Nothing could have been done, nothing. Sometimes people get sick, and none of us has the power to make them well. No one could have done anything. Even if you had brought me right at the first, we couldn't have done anything.
But you have magic.
Richard felt heartsick. Not for this, he whispered. Richard hugged Yannick for a moment. In the room beyond, the mother wept onto Raina's shoulder. Nadine was wrapping up some herbs for the woman and giving her instructions. The woman nodded against Raina's shoulder as she listened and sobbed.
Yannick, I need your help. I need to go see the other boys on your Jala team. Can you take us to their homes?
Yannick wiped his sleeve across his nose.
Why?
I'm afraid they might be sick, too. We have to know.
Yannick glanced back at his mother with unspoken concern. Richard gestured for Kara.
Yannick, where's your father?
He's a felt maker. He works down the street and three over to the right. He works until light every day.
Richard stood. Kara, have some soldiers go and get Yannick's father. He should be here with his wife right now. Have a couple of soldiers take his place for today and tomorrow and help out as best they can so that his family won't lose the income. Tell Raina to stay here with her until Yannick's father comes home. It shouldn't be long, then she can catch up with us. At the bottom of the stairs, Colin clutched his arm, holding him back, and asked Drefin and Nadine to wait outside with Yannick while Kara went to find his father. Colin closed the door to the alley, leaving Richard alone with her at the bottom of the dim stairwell. She wiped the tears from her cheeks with trembling fingers. Her green eyes let slip more.
Richard?
She swallowed and gasped a breath.
Richard, I didn't know. There was Marlin and the Sister of the Dark. I never knew that Yannick's brother was so sick, or I would never...
Richard held up a finger to silence her. He realized, though, by the dread in her eyes, that his scowl was what had silenced her.
Don't you dare dignify Nadine's cruel lies with an explanation. Don't you dare. I know you, and would never believe such things about you. Never.
She closed her eyes with relief and fell against his chest.
That poor child,
she wept. He stroked a hand down her long, thick hair.
I know.
Richard, we both heard what that boy said after he died.
Another warning that the Temple of the Winds has been violated. She pushed herself back. Her green eyes searched his.
Richard, we have to reconsider everything now. What you were telling me about the Temple of the Winds was only one source, and not an official one at that. It was just a journal kept by one man to keep himself occupied while he guarded the Slif. Besides that, you've only read parts of it, and it's in High Dharan, which is difficult to translate accurately. You may have been getting the wrong idea about the Temple of the Winds from the journal.
Well, I don't know that I would agree.
You're dead tired. You're not thinking. We now know the truth. The Temple of the Winds isn't trying to send a warning. It's trying to kill you.
Richard took pause at the concern on her face. Besides the grief he saw in her eyes, he saw disquiet. Disquiet for him. Kolo didn't make it sound like that was what was happening. From what I've read, I think the Red Moon is a warning that the Temple of the Winds has been violated. When the Red Moon came before,
Kolo said everyone was in an uproar. He didn't explain the uproar, did he? Maybe it was because the temple was trying to kill them. Kolo said that the team who had sent the Temple of the Winds away had betrayed them. Richard, face the facts. That dead boy just delivered a threat from the Temple of the Winds. The winds hunt you. You hunt something when you want to kill it. The Temple of the Winds is hunting you, trying to kill you.
Then why didn't it kill me, instead of the boy?
She didn't have an answer. Out in the alley, Drefin's blue, Darkenrawl eyes watched Richard and Colin returning over the boards in the mud. It seemed as if the process of deep reflection could be glimpsed through those eyes. Richard guessed that healers had to be keen observers of people, but those eyes made him feel somehow naked. At least he saw no magic in them. Nadine and Yannick waited in mute anxiety. Richard whispered to Colin to wait with Drefin and Yannick. He took Nadine's arm.
Nadine, would you come with me a moment, please?
She beamed up at him.
Sure, Richard.
He helped her step up into the stairwell. As Richard closed the door, she fussed with her hair. When the door was shut, he turned to the smiling Nadine and slammed her back against the wall so hard it drove the wind from her lungs. She pushed off the wall.
Richard!
He seized her by the throat and smacked her against the wall again, holding her there.
You and I were never going to be married.
The sword's magic, its fury, was bleeding into his voice. It was coursing through his veins.
We never are going to be married. I love Colin. I am going to marry Colin. The only reason you are still here is because you are somehow tangled in this. You are going to remain here for now until we can figure it out. I can, and I have, forgiven you for what you did to me, but if you ever again say or do anything so cruel and deliberately hurtful to Colin, you will spend the rest of your time in Adendrill down in the pit. Do you understand me?
Nadine put her fingers tenderly to his forearm. She smiled patiently, as if she thought he didn't fully grasp the situation, and she would make him see her reasoned side of it.
Richard, I know you're upset right now. Everyone is. But I was only trying to warn you. I didn't want you to be unaware of what had happened. I only wanted you to know the truth about what she had...
He slammed her against the wall again.
Do you understand me?
She watched his eyes a moment.
Yes,
she said, as if believing that there was no use in trying to reason with him until he cooled off. It only made Richard more angry. He struggled to rein it in so that he could get across to her that this was more than anger and that he meant what he was saying.
I know you have good in you, Nadine. I know that you care about people. We were friends back in Heartland, so I'm going to let this go with a warning. You had better mind my words. There is trouble about. A lot of people are going to need help. You always wanted to help people. I'm giving you your chance to do that. I can use your help. But Colin is the woman I love and the woman I'm going to marry. I won't have you trying to change that or trying to hurt her. Don't you so much as think to test this again, or I will find another herb woman to help. Are you clear on that?
Yes, Richard. Whatever you say, I promise. If she's what you really want, then I'll not interfere, no matter how wrong.
He held up a finger. Your toe is on the line, Nadine. If you step over it, I swear there will be no coming back.
Yes, Richard.
She smiled in an understanding, patient, long-suffering way.
Whatever you say.
She seemed to be satisfied that he had paid attention to her. It reminded him of a child who misbehaved so that a beloved parent would notice her. He glared at her until he was sure she would not say another word, and only then did he open the door. Dreffin was squatted down, whispering words of comfort to Yannick while he rested a hand on the boy's shoulder. Colin's green eyes watched as Nadine reached back for Richard's hand to help her balance as she stepped onto the narrow board in the mud.
Dreffin, Richard said when he had joined them, I need to talk to you about some of the things you said in there.
Dreffin rubbed Yannick's back and then stood.
What things?
About how you wanted Kara and Raina to get me out of there, for one thing. I want to know why.
Dreffin considered Richard a moment, and then Yannick. He drew open his cloak, hooking it behind one of the leather pouches on his belt. He opened the pouch at the front of his belt and poured some dried powder from a leather purse onto a piece of paper. He twisted the paper closed and handed it to the boy.
Yannick, before we go to see the other boys, would you please take this up to your mother and tell her to steep it in hot water for a couple of hours to make a tea, and then strain it and see that everyone in your family drinks it tonight? It will help build up your family's strength to keep them well.
Yannick looked at the paper in his hand.
Sure. I'll be back as soon as I tell my mother.
No rush, Geoffrey said. We'll be waiting when you're through.
Richard watched Yannick close the door.
All right. I know you wanted me out of there because of the danger of catching the plague from the sick boy. But we're all in danger, aren't we?
Yes, but I don't know how much. You are the Lord Rawl. I wanted you as far away as possible.
How do you catch the plague?
Dreffin glanced to Colin and Nadine, and then to Ulick and Egan back with the soldiers guarding either end of the alley. He took a deep breath.
No one knows how the plague is passed from one person to the next, or even if that is the way it spreads. There are some who believe that it's the wrath of the spirits brought down on us, and the spirits decide who they will smite. There are others who argue that the effluvia infest the very air of a place, of a city, endangering everyone. Others insist that it can only be caught by inhaling the infectious steams of the body of a sick person. I can only assume, for the sake of caution, that, like fire, the closer you are, the more dangerous it is. I didn't want you close to that danger, that's all.
Richard was so tired that he felt sick. Only his terror kept him on his feet. Colin had been near the boy, too.
So you're saying that it's possible we could all get it just from being in the same house as someone who has it?
It's possible.
But the sick boy's family doesn't have it, and they lived with him. His mother tended to him. Wouldn't she have it, at least, if that were true?
Dreffin considered his words carefully. Several times I have seen isolated outbreaks of the plague. One time, when I was young and in training, I went with an older healer to a town, Castaglen Crossing, that had been visited with the plague. From this place I learned much of what I know about the sickness. It started when a merchant came with his wagon of goods to sell. It was reported that when he arrived he was coughing, vomiting, and complaining of agonizing headaches. In other words, the plague was already upon him before he arrived in Castaglen Crossing. We never knew where he came to have it, but it could have been that he drank envenomed water, stayed with a sick farmer, or that the spirits chose to strike him with it. The townspeople, wishing to do a trusted merchant a kindness, put him up in a room, where he died the next morning. Everyone remained well for a time, and they thought the danger had passed them by. They soon forgot about the man who had died among them. Because of the confusion brought on by the sickness and death by the time we arrived, the accounts were varied, but we were able to determine that the first townsperson became sick with the plague at least 14 days by some accounts, or as many as 20 days by others, after the merchant arrived. Richard pinched his lower lip as he thought.
Kip was well at the Jalar game a few days back, so that would mean that he really became ill with it sometime before. Despite being mournful over the boy's death, Richard felt great relief that what he had been thinking didn't seem to be plausible. If Kip got the plague long before the Jalar game, then Jagang didn't have anything to do with it. The prophecy wasn't involved. But then, why the warning of the winds hunting him? That would also mean, Jeffen said, that the dead boy's family may yet become sick. They look well at the moment, but they may already be fatally infected with plague, just as were the people of Castaglen Crossing.
Then, Nadine said, we may all have caught it just from being in the room with the boy. That awful smell was his sickness. We may all have the plague from breathing it in, but won't know it for a couple of weeks yet.
Jeffen shot her a condescending look. I can't deny that it's possible. Do you wish to run away, Herb Woman, and spend the next 2 or 3 weeks preparing for death by living out the things you always wanted to do? Nadine lifted her chin.
No. I'm a healer. I intend to help.
Jeffen smiled in that private, knowing way he had. Good, then. A true healer is above the phantom evils he chases. But she may be right, Richard said. We may all already be infected with the plague.
Jeffen lifted a hand, warding off the concern. We mustn't let fear rule us. When I was in Castaglen Crossing, I cared for many people who were in death's grip, people just like that boy. So did the man who took me there. We never became sick. I was never able to determine any pattern to the plague. We touched the sick every day and never became sick.
Possibly because we were with the sick so much that our bodies knew it well and were able to strengthen us against its corruption. Sometimes a member of a family would come down sick, and thereafter every member of the family, even those who stayed away from the sick room, succumbed to the plague and all died. In other homes, I witnessed one or even several children come down sick with the plague and die, yet their mothers who tended them nearly every moment never became ill, nor did any other member of the household.
Richard sighed in frustration.
Drefen, all this isn't very helpful. Maybe this, maybe that, sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Jeffen wiped a hand wearily across his face. I'm just telling you what I've seen, Richard. There are people who will tell you for sure that it is this or it is that. Shortly, there will be people in the streets who will be selling indisputable cures, unquestionable preservatives against the plague. Hucksters all. What I am telling you is that I don't know the answers. Sometimes knowledge is beyond our limited understanding. It's one of our tenets, as healers, that it is a wise man who admits the limits of his knowledge and skill, and that pretending either causes harm.
Of course. Richard felt foolish to have pressed for answers that weren't there. You're right, of course. It's better to know the truth than hang hope on lies.
Richard looked to see where the sun was in the sky, but clouds were moving in, obscuring it. A cold wind was coming up. At least it wasn't hot. Jeffen had said that the plague spread worst in heat. He looked back at Jeffen.
Are there any herbs or anything that you do know will help prevent it or cure it?
A standard precaution is to treat the homes of sick people with smoke. It is said the smoke may purge the air of the effluvia. There are herbs that are recommended for smoking sick rooms. I would think it a wise precaution, at least, but I wouldn't count on it. There are other herbs that can help with the complaints of the plague, the headaches, sickness of the stomach, things like that, but none that I know of that will cure the plague itself. Even with these treatments, the person will likely die just the same, but they may have some comfort from the herbs before they pass.
Colin touched Dreffen's arm.
Do all the people who come down with the plague die? Are all who catch it doomed?
Jeffen smiled in reassurance to her.
No, some recover. In the beginning, not as many, and in the end of the outbreak, more.
Sometimes if the infection can be urged to a head and the poison drained away, then the person will recover, but will complain for the rest of their life about the torture of the treatment.
Richard saw Yannick come out the door. He put his arm around Colin's waist and pulled her close. so we may all already be infected.
Drefin watched his eyes a moment. It's possible, but I don't believe it so. Richard's head was pounding, but it wasn't from any plague. It was from lack of sleep and dread.
Well then, let's go to the other boys' homes and see what we can find out. We need to know as much as we can.
Chapter 30. The first boy they went to see, Mark, was fine. Mark was happy to see Yannick and wondered why he hadn't seen him and his brother Kip for the last few days. The young mother was frightened by the important strangers who had appeared at her door inquiring after the health of her son. Richard was relieved that Mark, who had been in the Jala game with Yannick and his brother, wasn't sick. So far, only one boy who had been at the Jala game had become sick. It was looking more and more as if his fears about Jagang were just panicked inferences. Richard was beginning to feel the warmth of hope. Yannick told a stunned Mark of Kip's death. Richard told the mother to send for Drefin if any of the family fell ill. Richard left the home feeling much better. The second boy, Sidney, had been dead since morning. By the time they found the third boy lying in blankets at the rear of a one-room house, Richard's hopes had faded. Bert was gravely ill, but at least his extremities weren't black, as Kip's had been. His mother told them that he had a headache and had been throwing up. While Drefin saw to the boy, Nadine gave the woman herbs.
"Sprinkle these on the fire," Nadine told Bert's mother. "It's mugwort, fennel, and hussock. They'll smoke and help drive away the sickness. Bring hot coals to your boy, put a pinch of the herbs on the coals, and fan the smoke at your son to ensure that he breathes enough of it. It will help drive the sickness from him."
"You think that will really help?"
Richard whispered when Nadine returned to Richard's side, near the boy.
"Drefin said he doesn't know if it will."
"I was taught that it was said to help serious sickness, like the plague," she said in a low voice. "But I've never seen anyone with the plague before, so I can't say for sure. Richard, it's all I know to do. I have to try."
Even though he was dead tired and had a headache, Richard had no trouble sensing the helplessness in her voice. She wanted to help. As Drefin had said, maybe it would do some good. Richard watched as Drefin pulled a knife from his belt. He gestured for Kara and Raina, who had both caught up with them after taking care of Richard's instructions, to hold down the sick boy. Raina gripped Bert's chin with one hand and held his forehead with the other. Kara pressed his shoulders into the blankets. With a steady hand, Drefin lanced the swelling at the side of the boy's throat. Bert's screams seared Richard's nerves. He could almost feel the knife slicing his own throat. The mother wrung her hands as she stood off a ways, watching with unblinking eyes. Richard remembered Drefin saying that if the person lived, they would complain the rest of their life about the torture of the treatment. Bert would have cause.
"What did you give Kip's mother?"
Colin asked Nadine.
"I gave her some herbs to smoke the house, the same as I gave this woman," Nadine said. "And I made her a pouch of hopcone, lavender, yarrow, and lemon balm leaves to put in her pillow so that she might sleep. Even so, I don't know that she will be able to sleep after..."
Her eyes turned away.
"I know that I wouldn't be able to,"
she whispered, almost to herself. "Do you have any herbs that you think might prevent the plague?" Richard asked. "Things that would keep people from catching it?" Nadine watched Drefin mopping blood and pus from the boy's throat.
"I'm sorry, Richard, but I don't know enough about it. Drefin might be right. He seems to know a lot. There may be no cure or preventative."
Richard went to the boy and squatted down beside Drefin, watching his brother work.
"Why are you doing that?"
Drefin glanced over as he folded the rag to a clean place.
"As I said before, sometimes, if the sickness can be brought to a head and drained, they will recover. I have to try."
Drefin gestured to the two moored Sith. They gripped the boy again. Richard winced as he watched Drefin slide the sharp knife deeper into the swelling, bringing forth more blood and yellowish-white fluid. Mercifully, Bert passed out. Richard wiped sweat from his own brow. He felt helpless. He had his sword to defend against attack, but it could do no good against this. He wished it was something he could fight. Behind him, Nadine spoke to Colin in a soft voice, but loud enough for Richard to hear.
Colin, I'm sorry about what I said before. I've devoted my life to helping sick people. It makes me so upset to see people suffer. That's what I was angry about, not you. I was frustrated at Yannick's grief, and I lashed out at you. It wasn't your fault. Nothing could have been done. I'm sorry.
Richard didn't turn. Colin said nothing, but she might have offered Nadine a smile to accept the apology. Somehow, Richard doubted it. He knew Colin, and he knew that she expected as much from others as she expected from herself. Forgiveness was not forthcoming simply because someone asked for it. The transgression was weighed into the equation, and there were transgressions that outweighed absolution. The apology hadn't been for Colin anyway. It had been for Richard's benefit. Like a child who had been upbraided, Nadine was on her best behavior, trying to impress him with how good she could be. Sometimes, even though she had once brought him pain, a part of him was comforted to have Nadine around. She reminded him of home and his happy childhood. She was a familiar face from a carefree time. Another part of him was troubled over what her real purpose was in coming. Despite what she might believe, she hadn't decided it on her own. Someone or something had precipitated her actions. Another part of him wanted to skin her alive. After they left Bert's home, Yannick led them down a cobbled alley to a yard behind where Darby Anderson's family lived. The small yard of mud churned with wood shavings was cluttered with cut-offs and scraps, several stickered stacks of lumber protected by tarps, some old, rusty two-man ripsaws, two carving benches, and warped, split, or twisted boards leaning up against the buildings to the side. Darby recognized Richard and Colin from the Jala game. He was astonished that they had come to his home. To have them come to see a Jala game was a cause of great pride, but to have them come to his home was beyond belief. He frantically brushed sawdust from his short brown hair and dirty work clothes. Yannick had told Richard that the whole Anderson family, Darby, his two sisters, his parents, father's parents, and an aunt, lived over their small workshop. Clive Anderson, Darby's father, and Erling, his grandfather, made chairs. Both men, having heard the commotion, had come to the wide double doors and were bowing.
"Forgive us, Mother Confessor, Lord Rawl," Clive said after Darby had introduced his father. "But we didn't know you were coming, or we would have made preparations. I'd have had my wife make tea or something. I'm afraid that we're just simple folk."
"Please, don't be concerned about any of that, Master Anderson," Richard said. "We came because we were concerned about your son." Erling, the grandfather, took a stern step toward Darby.
"What's the boy done?"
"It's nothing like that," Richard said. "You have a fine grandson. We watched him play Jala the other day. One of the other boys is sick. Worse, two others of them have died." Darby's eyes widened.
"Died? Who?"
"Kip,"
Yannick said, his voice choking off.
"And Sidney," Richard added. "Bert is very ill, too."
Darby stood in shock. His grandfather put a comforting hand to the boy's shoulder.
"My brother, Drefan," Richard lifted a hand to the side, "is a healer. We're checking on all the boys on the Jala team. We don't know if Drefan can help, but he would like to try."
"I'm fine,"
Darby said in a shaky voice. Erling, an unshaven, scrawny man, had teeth so crooked Richard wondered how he managed to chew his food. He noticed Colin's white dress and Richard's gold cloak billowing in the cold wind, and gestured toward the shop.
"Please, won't you all step inside? The wind is biting today. It's warmer inside out of the weather. I think we'll have snow tonight, the way it looks."
Ulick and Egan took up posts near the back gate. Soldiers milled about in the alley. Richard, Colin, Nadine, and Drefan went into the shop. Kara and Raina shadowed them inside, but remained on guard near the doors. Old chairs and templates hung from pegs on the dusty walls. Cobwebs in all the corners that in a forest would have netted dew, here netted loads of sawdust. The workbench held chair pieces being glued up, a fine-toothed saw, a variety of smaller finishing and beading planes, and a number of chisels. Several jack and long joiner planes hung on the wall behind the bench, along with hammers and other tools. Partially finished chairs, cinched tightly together in twisted ropes as they were being finished, or drying in peg and wedge clamps, sat about the floor. A carving horse, where the grandfather had been when they came into the yard, held a split billet of ash he had been working with a draw knife. Clive, a broad-shouldered young man, seemed content to let his father do the talking.
"What's ailing these children?"
Erling asked Drefin. Drefin cleared his throat, but let Richard answer. Richard was so tired he could hardly stand any more. He almost felt as if he were asleep, and this was just a bad dream. "The plague. I'm relieved to see that Darley here is well." Erling's scruffy jaw dropped.
"Dear spirits, spare us."
Clive turned white.
"My daughters are sick."
He turned suddenly and ran for the stairs, but stopped abruptly.
"Please, Master Drefin, will you see them?"
"Of course, show the way." Upstairs, Darby's mother, grandmother, and aunt had been making meat pies. Turnips were boiling in a pot hung in the hearth, and the boiling water had steamed the windows over. The three women, alarmed by Clive's calls, were waiting wide-eyed in the center of the upstairs common room. They were shocked by the sight of the strangers, but bowed the instant they saw Colin's white dress. Colin, in the dress of the Mother Confessor, needed no introduction to anyone in Aidan Drill, or most of the Midlands, for that matter.
"Addy, this man here, Master Drefin, is a healer, and has come to see the girls."
Hattie, her short, sandy-colored hair tied back with a head wrap, wiped her hands on her apron. Her gaze darted among all the people standing in her home.
"Thank you. This way, please."
"How do they fare?" Drefin asked Hattie on their way back to the bedroom.
"Beth has complained since yesterday of her head hurting," Hattie said. "She was sick at her stomach earlier. Common children ailments, that's all."
It sounded to Richard more like a plea than a statement of fact.
"I gave her some black all-round tea to settle her."
"That's good," Nadine assured her. "An infusion made of pennyroyal might help, too. I have some with me. I'll leave in case she needs it."
"Thank you for the kindness,"
Hattie said, her concern growing with each step she took.
"What of the other girl?" Drefin asked.
Hattie had almost reached the doorway.
"Lily's not so sick, but just feeling out of sorts. I suspect she's just looking for sympathy because her older sister is getting attention and honey tea. That's the way of children. She has some little round sores on her legs."
Drefin missed a step. Beth was fevered, but not gravely so. She had a wet cough and complained that her head hurt. Drefin all but ignored her. He watched Lily in that analytical way of his as she sat in her blankets, carrying on an earnest conversation with her rag doll. The grandmother fussed with her collar and watched from the doorway as Hattie fussed with Beth's covers. The aunt mopped Beth's brow with a wet cloth while Nadine spoke words of comfort to the girl. Nadine really did have a soothing, kind way about her. She selected herbs from leather pouches in her bag and wrapped them up in several cloth packets, giving the intent, nodding mother instructions. Richard and Colin moved with Drefin over to the younger girl. Colin squatted down and talked to her, telling her what a lovely doll she had, so as to keep her from being frightened by Richard and Drefin. Lily cast worried looks in their direction as she chattered with Colin. Colin hugged an arm around Richard's waist to show Lily that he wasn't anyone to be afraid of. Richard made himself smile.
"Lily," Drefin said with forced cheerfulness, "could you show me your doll's sores?"
Lily held the doll upside down and pointed out spots on the inside of the doll's thighs.
"She has ouches here, and here, and here."
Her big round eyes turned up to Drefin.
And do they hurt her?
Lily nodded.
She goes, ouch, when I touch them.
Really? Well, that's too bad. I'll bet she's better soon, though.
He squatted down so that he wasn't towering over her, circling an arm around Colin's waist and pulling her back down with him.
Lily, this is my friend Colin. Her eyes aren't so good. She can't see the sores on your doll's legs. Could you show Colin here the ones on your legs?
Nadine was still talking to the mother about the other girl. Lily glanced in their direction. Colin brushed Lily's hair back and told her what a pretty doll she had. Lily grinned. She was fascinated by Colin's long hair. Colin let her feel it.
Can you show me the ouches on your legs?
Colin asked. Lily hiked up her white nightdress.
Here they are, just like my doll's ouchies.
She had several dark spots, the size of pennies, on the inside of each thigh. Richard could tell when Drefin gently touched them that they were hard as calluses. Colin straightened Lily's nightdress back down and drew the blanket back over her lap as Drefin patted her cheek, telling her what a good girl she was and that her doll's ouches would be better by morning.
I'm glad,
Lily said.
She doesn't like them.
Erling was absently planing a chair seat at the workbench. Richard could see that he wasn't paying any attention to what he was doing and was ruining it. He didn't look up when they came down the stairs. At Richard's urging, Clive had stayed upstairs with his wife and daughters.
Do they have it?
Erling asked in a hoarse voice. Drefin laid a comforting hand on the old man's shoulders. I'm afraid so. Erling took a shaky, crooked stroke with his plane.
When I was young, I lived in the town of Sparrowview. The plague came one summer. It took a good many people. I hoped never to see such a thing again.
I understand, Jeffin said in a soft voice. I too have seen it visit places.
They're my only granddaughters. What can we do to help them?
You can try to smoke the house, Drefin offered.